What is up, y'all? Here we are at the final episode of the season. Can you believe it? For those of you that have been with us for this very long journey, we appreciate you. Thanks for coming back for another week. If you're just joining us, welcome to the Kumbavoko fan club. It's your host, B. Rye, the only unrecognized Tashira of the dyed hair breathing style. And of course, I am joined by my friends as always.
Hi, guys. It's Emily. Happy to be here this morning. And boy, oh boy, did I forget about a lot of stuff that had happened in this episode. So I'm excited to dive right in and just start talking about it.
What's up, everyone? It's Hannah, aka the person that carries the entire Tanjiro fan base on her back. So I'm here and I'm excited to talk about my boy as well as the show.
Solid start for everybody today. So we start this episode off with a lovely speed competition between Tanjiro and Kanao. He has started a trade-off between Kanao with winning and losing speed matches. We see him lose the match, and he says, "I'm off for a run," and asks the other boys to join him. Seeing all three of them together and fully recovered, how have they changed since getting to stand on butterfly wings at the Butterfly Mansion?
Oh, okay. Dropping some metaphors there. I really like the growth that they've had. I think that Zenitsu's majorly calmed down, even though he's still wild. Like, his just crazy always yelling has toned down a bit, but it's still there, so you know that it's still him. Inosuke is honestly even more wild now, and I kind of like it. But I think that they really have grown into a beautiful friendship at this point. You know, they've still only really fought the one battle together, but now they've recovered multiple times with each other. They've experienced highs and lows. They've experienced life and death. And now, like, you really get the sense that they're, okay, this is like a close-knit group now. And I really love that.
Yeah. It's amazing what a couple broken ribs a few times every other week will do for a friendship between three people. I think that there's something to be said, though, here about them tapping in a little bit more, whether they wanted to or not, to their feminine sides as well. You know, they're surrounded by all these women that are extraordinarily powerful, but in ways that require more than just brute strength, which I think to this point is what all three of them have exhibited. Zenitsu maybe has to be lured out of him a little bit, but definitely the other two. And they've all come away, you know, with these additional skills that are going to help them throughout the course of the rest of the story, this like focused, concentrated breathing style that's necessary for them to be able to fight on a level like the Hashira that they would have never discovered if they hadn't come to study and train, you know, with these really powerful, strong women. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, getting in line with their yin and their yang, they're going to be even stronger fighters going forward.
Hell yeah. I like that, you know, Inosuke is also like probably bathed for like the first time in months too. So like we can just assume that that's happened.
And Tanjiro is relieved because he doesn't smell bad anymore. Can you imagine? LOL.
Exactly. Right. So after that, right, we get to see Tanjiro making his rounds to say goodbye to Aoi and Kanao. Tell me about which conversation struck you more and how it changed the dynamic of both characters present. Do you feel that Tanjiro has changed either of these characters?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I'm going to try to not steal Hannah's thunder here a little bit, but both conversations are really important. And it goes to show that, like, while the women have rubbed off on them, the men, and particularly Tanjiro, have rubbed off on them a little bit as well. Which one struck me more? Probably the conversation with Kanao. The conversation with Aoi was also sweet, but a little bit more like somebody talking to a child, in a way to like pump them up and like make them believe in themselves a little bit more. But the one with Kanao is so interesting because, like we talked about in the last episode, it's like helping her to break her rules and break out of her shell a little bit more. And like whether or not she's fully comfortable with that, I don't know, but there's never a good time to start something that you're uncomfortable with. So I think that, you know, Tanjiro taking her coin and helping to make a decision for her to choose to stop making so many decisions is something that's really powerful and that I think will fundamentally change her moving forward.
Tanjiro just making all the ladies fall in love with him. I think both Aoi and Kanao were like, oh, this moment in time. I agree with Emily. Obviously, I love Tanjiro as a character, and one of the things that I love about him is just like every character that he meets changes because of his influence on them, and it's something that I really love about that character. And it goes along with his storyline because he's such a good person that these people are going to change when they meet him. I would say that like the conversation with Kanao definitely is one that sticks out to me more, a little bit more, just because, you know, like Kanao, we just really learned a lot about in the previous episode. And like we talked about, she doesn't really speak, and Tanjiro is able to change it very quickly and very smartly. You know, he sits there and thinks for a moment, and then he's like, I got it. I'm going to use this against you, but in a good way. So it definitely stuck out to me. But I do want to say the conversation with Aoi, I think, was more important than a lot of people let on, because we are learning something new about the Demon Slayer Corps, that someone can pass final selection, but then not go on missions, which we didn't think was really possible. And we're meeting, you know, these different kinds of people, and we're learning that not everyone is just like either being forced into it or just super, super brave. Like Aoi feels very real. Like in all reality, if I pass final selection, I'd probably be in her shoes. I wouldn't be able to take it. So I thought that was really interesting for the story. And I think what Tanjiro said was just so important to her. So it meant a lot. Both scenes did.
Yeah. I really liked part of what he said was, you know, I'm going to carry you with me into battle every time going forward. And I just thought that was really cute. Mm-hmm. Like in a way that's like, she's still getting to live her Demon Slayer, like bravery. So I think mm-hmm. that's really nice. Going after that, right? We get the pan to Ubi, Yashiki, and Shinobu. We see him chatting about Tanjiro being assigned to the next mission, with Tanjiro being the hot topic of the Demon Slayer corpse, but he's not emo. Don't worry about that. how do you think this is shaping his long-term journey within the core?
Well, I think Ubayashiki kind of said it himself with him running into Kibutsuji and with Nezuko being a demon but not killing humans. It's his destiny. You know, they talk very highly of him, Shinobu and Ubayashiki both. You know, she mentioned he's brave and hardworking and exceeds her expectations on just how good of a person he is. And Ubayashiki was just like, yeah, I know. But I think that it kind of goes along with the last question. Tanjiro just has an influence on everyone. And you like, everyone is feeling it. Everyone is feeling that like the tides are changing because of him and Nezuko. And I think that both Ubayashiki and Shinobu understand that based off this conversation. They know things are about to change.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's an awareness to like this child of destiny, especially for Ubayashiki. Also kind of being a child of destiny in his own right, just being passed down for generations and generations, because there's been like such little headway in the fight to try to defeat Muzan. And in all these generations, like how many people have actually encountered him? Probably less than you could count on one hand, and certainly even less than that could live to tell the tale. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he did it and is here with them, even if he's a little bit clunky and you know, a diamond in the rough that still needs some shaping, like Shinobu says, this is the beginning of his hero's journey, and they're ready to help mold him into that shape, which is why they're going to send him on this mission to try to get in touch with the flames of his past. So,
oh.
That
was amazing. I liked that. I liked that slide into that. That was great, Emily.
Thanks.
Okay. Solid. So we even get a flash from the elusive Giyu. We love to see our sad boy show up, right? Tanjiro is able to say thank you for vouching for him and Nezuko, And what do you guys think about saying, or when Giyu says Tanjiro can thank him by working hard and killing more demons?
Well, on a surface level, he's saying, you know, like, don't F this up. I'm putting my life on the line for you. You better go do something, right? but, you know, it's he wants to see him get stronger, and he wants to see him, I think, fulfill this prophecy. And I don't know that Giyu is, like, as in touch with that idea as somebody like Uba Yashiki is, but I think that he knows that there is something extraordinarily rare and special about Tanjiro and Nezuko. So working hard and killing more demons is, like, what they are in the business of, and these two stand the best chance at taking down Muzan and just ending it for all. But again, before that, it's going to take a lot of practice and a lot more hard work to get to a level that's even similar to the Hashira. So I think that's what he's saying. Keep making yourself stronger, because I did kind of save your life. Use the life that I gave you to do something good.
Yeah, Giyu saved his life twice now. Yeah. Emily, you kind of mentioned that, you know, Tanjiro and Nezuko are clearly different, and Giyu was the first to find that out. You know, he was in that first episode. He was the one who sent Tanjiro and Nezuko to Urokodaki to become a demon slayer. And so I think it kind of goes along with that, why he's just like, you can thank me by working hard. He's like, keep proving me right. You know, Giyu is not some fluffy person that's going to be like, oh, of course, you know, like, I care about you, blah, blah, blah. He's like, all right, yeah, of course. Now, you know, please don't prove me wrong. Please keep going. And I think it was like a special moment. I think there's a lot to come between the two of them. And Giyu was very quiet, and that it went along with his character super well. He was just like, okay, go fight demons. And then he was gone. It was cool. He's so cool.
Right? That, like, instant flash away, like, it gave me, like, Dragon Ball Z, like, instant transmission vibes. I was like, all right, bro.
Same thing he did in episode one, too. It's like a cool little callback. It's like, ah, he's so cool.
Solid. Then there's the real meat of this episode, right? This is the fun. We get to see the dismantling of the lower ranks. Now, I know how I felt when I rewatched this episode. It was terrifying, because it scares me when I see what he is capable of. Muzan in particular. How did you all feel when you saw this scene? Did you have a favorite part of this scene?
I remember my first thought was, this is not a kid's show. which it's never felt that way to me, but in that, like, I think this is probably the goriest moment so far in the show. Like, there's just blood everywhere. I think that it was extremely telling of the lengths that Muzan will go to defeat the Demon Slayer Corps. If he thinks that you're not helping, you're done. And I had to feel a little bad for them. Like, they had no idea. Like, they had nothing to do with Rui and what he was doing on that mountain. And because he got killed, they all get killed. Like, that's feels bad, man. but I think there was so much happening in that scene. And we see that Muzan is once again shape-shifting. We see him able to read minds. Like, we're learning so much more about him, the lengths that he'll go to. I think it was just, it was a very eerie scene, creepy scene, but also was very important to the story because it taught us so much about Muzan and what he will do. I think my favorite moment from that scene is when the guy runs and his head is just hanging there afterwards and he's like, huh?
That's rough, buddy.
I shouldn't laugh at it, but I was laughing at it because I'm like, he thought he could run, and then he all of a sudden
he really thought he did something.
But side note, shout out to the animation of the Infinity Castle and the sound design of the Biwa. We know what's coming, and holy frick. That's all I can say.
That's true. The demons can't even get out.
Yeah.
Man. So I mentioned, you know, in my little intro that it's been a really long time since I've watched this episode. And I think I just forgot about it, to be honest. This is like a great finale episode because of this scene, I think. Everything else is fun, everything else is cute, and we're getting ready to send them, of course, into the Mugen Train arc. But you can't have the Mugen Train arc with this, and something that's really important about this scene that I completely forgot is that Enmu is in it. And like we have to see everybody that's going to set this next arc into motion. So getting to see Enmu and Enmu's kind of terrifying response to Muzan as well, because again, like, they're all being punished for the sins of another, the sin just being that they died. And they're all clearly terrified of Muzan, except for one of them, which is Enmu, who is like, thank you so much for allowing me to be the last one that you'll kill so that I can watch everybody else die first. And like, how ominous is that? And then him receiving, you know, the injection of blood from Muzan to get stronger because of his response, as well as the images of Tanjiro implanted in his mind so that he knows exactly what his next mission is going to be. It's so ominous. Mm. And I completely forgot that he was in this scene. And but we all know what he does next if we've seen the movie or season two, which we're going to get to very, very shortly. So it's powerful. It's like it definitely goes to show that Muzan is extraordinarily powerful, extremely selective, and unendingly cruel as well, in that the demon that he would choose to bestow his blood upon is like a psycho killer. So powerful scene, beautiful animation, and just a taste of what's to come, but perfect for a finale.
Right. I did also like, I don't know which demon it was, but it was one of the demons that was like, if only I could have more of your blood, please. And then he was like, are you trying to tell me what to do? And he's like, you deserve to die. You tried to tell me what to do. And then he just finished him. It was just, oh,
gut wrenching. That guy got killed off the, he got killed off screen. He's,
All right, so of course we find out that they are going to meet up with our flame Hashira, Mr. Rengoku. They finally reach the train station, and of course the first thing Inosuke decides to do is that he should headbutt the train. Now, Tanjiro, being the best boy he is, tells him he should not always attack first, as this may be someone of high rank or a deity of the land. In this moment, Zenitsu is the only reasonable one and says it's just a vehicle to transport people. How do you think you would react, never knowing what a train is before and having your mission on it?
Oh, I love this moment so much. I think I would probably be somewhere in the middle, because I want to be as good as Tanjiro is, where he's like, it could be a nice spirit. Like, it could be the leader of the land or whatever, but I wouldn't be like Inosuke just trying to be like, I'm gonna fight it, you know. I would just be like, what the heck is that? Zenitsu would tell me, okay. But I thought it was really cute. It was like Zenitsu's first time being the reasonable one. You think Tanjiro's about to be the reasonable one because he's trying to stop Inosuke from doing it, and then all of a sudden he's like, but it could be a spirit that's governing over this land. And it's like, oh, you don't know either. That's so cute. Love it.
It's just, it is such a funny moment, because it's like so childlike for us living obviously like in the 21st century. Like, we are well aware of like all different kinds of technology, but we have to keep in mind that this is, you know, during a much earlier period in Japan. And so depending on where you lived, this is not something that ever would have passed by your house. This is like the beginning of electricity, the beginning of something like a steam powered or a coal powered engine. So if you've never been near a city, like Tanjiro clearly never was, and neither was Inosuke, being raised by boars in the forest, like they never would have seen this. So it probably does seem almost like a living, breathing monster of a thing. And it's really interesting and fun, and something that I think this show does really well, to see like the context of actual true human history combined with this kind of like magical like realism that exists. It's like it's the same world, but if demons existed, and you know, these poor little country bumpkins literally never seen a train. So it's cute. I think it's a wholesome but like probably a pretty accurate reaction. I imagine little Japanese kids from the rural parts of the country seeing a train for the first time would have had a similar reaction.
Yeah. That was my favorite part, was the country bumpkin remark. Ah, I love that. I'm going to start using that in my life. And finally, right, we have the outro of the episode. We pan the Mugen train with the Komoboko squad at the back, the flash of our empty-headed Flame Hashira Rengoku, and the demon of the lowest rank in the Kazuki. Where do you think this is going from here? Now that we've kind of seen this, like, what do you think comes within the next arc?
I think that they have to fight the train. It's fun. More importantly than whatever happens necessarily on the train, trying to choose my words very carefully here because we've all already seen it, but the most important thing I think that's going to happen for them on this train is getting to meet and work with Rengoku. They have not really spent time with a Hashira one-on-one yet. Shinobu's probably the closest, and even then she wasn't really the one that was like initiating all of this training and like rehabilitation that just happened at the Butterfly Mansion. She just kind of facilitated the invite. So this is going to be like the first Hashira that they really spend time with, and for Tanjiro that's really important because, as we've said, you know, this is the Flame Hashira and Tanjiro's trying to learn about fire breathing, and while they're not exactly the same thing, it's probably the closest he's going to get and the strongest possible person that he can work with. So anything that they can learn and glean from him is going to be extraordinarily important in this next arc. You know, and the little foreshadowing that we have with our demon Enmu as well means that there's going to be a fight. So that's all I'm going to say.
Hell yeah.
Don't go. Okay, wait. Oh. I just watched this end and I was like, this is such a good end to a season. It's setting us up for the end, or not the end, it's sending us up for the next arc, but it's also like has a very ending feeling with like the OP is playing and Tanjiro's talking about how Nezuko is and him are never going to be separated. But it definitely is setting us up for, like Emily said, you know, we see Rengoku sitting in there and we know Tanjiro needs to talk to him about, you know, this fire that's happening. We see Enmu on top of the train, so we know that like there's going to be a fight. It's setting things up very well. I will say I had a realization when I was watching it. I was like, man, Mugen Train literally picks up like mere seconds after the end of the season. We got like a year wait in between, you know, but they literally just like walked in the train after that and the Mugen Train arc starts. So it's like, I forget that like time is like that in the show where it just happened instantly. It all happens in a night when we had to wait, you know, however long for the arc. So it's setting us up for a very interesting next arc that I cannot wait to talk about.
Definitely. I think this is like a Rick and Morty reference for those listeners that are watching, but like if you've seen the train episode of Rick and Morty and how they metaphorically use the train as something to move the story forward, I always like when they do that. It's always very interesting to see how things inside of the story pace itself with climax and, you know, with events and character conflict. So it's going to be a fun time to see how this train moves these folks forward. Finally, we have our favorite moments. My favorite moment of this episode, call me sadistic if you will, but is watching Enmu talk about his pleasure and agony of suffering of others, and then moves on injecting blood in him and dumping him out on the streets. Nothing more cunning and villainous than shitting on your subordinates.
True, but I think that he enjoyed it, so.
He loved that. He was like, yes.
Oh my god. Yes.
I say this so many times. There's so many good moments in this episode. It was such a well done finale. It was like, it was chillax, but it also had its moments where you're like, oh, this is the end of the season. Okay. But I'm going to call it two like kind of silly moments. When the butterfly triplets are saying goodbye to the trio before they leave, and Tanjiro's like talking to Giyu and Zenitsu's being Zenitsu. I didn't notice this before, but Inosuke has his little bubbles. when they're all saying goodbye, like they're giving him food and he's literally holding the pack of food, just standing there with bubbles. Like that's, you know, that's a signifying that he's like feeling love, you know? And then he says, I'm giddy. Or I feel giddy. And I was like, Inosuke, he's feeling love. And it's so sweet. And then the other moment was just after the three got chased by the police at the train station, and Zenitsu's explaining how the Demon Slayer Corps is not recognized by the government. And it's a good callback to the very beginning of the show, because they mentioned that and then we might have forgotten. And Tanjiro just goes, even though we're working so hard, and he has just like this sad but like cute face, and I'm just like, stop it. I know I cheated with two, but both of those little moments just makes me what I love about the show.
Love it. It's really hard to pick a favorite moment in this episode, because this is actually, like I said, it's a really good finale. And I think I had forgotten just how good it was until I watched it again for the first time in a very long time. And something that I like that and this is like not super uncommon for animes to do, but I like how they used it here in particular after this journey of 26 episodes that we've seen all of our Demon Slayers go through. I think that my favorite thing was what tied it all together. And so it was just an editing choice that they made here where we didn't get an intro at the beginning. We kind of just cut right into the title card for the episode. And then at the very end of the episode, as we're watching all of them heading off on this train to their next mission and into our next season, that's when we hear the song kind of like overlaid over, you know, all of our boys happy, smiling, looking with each other and getting ready for the future. So I love that. I love the call to this song. I love it highlighted in a way that we haven't seen before in the show. And it's a great song, too. So definitely, I think the first song that people would think of when they think of Demon Slayer. So I think that's my favorite moment in this episode.
It gave us those flashbacks of moments in the season too, all the way to episode one. Chills. So good. I agree.
Of course, right? No anime is complete without a iconic opening. And I mean, one of the most ones out there, right? So yeah. With that being said, that is all the time that we've got for today, folks. We appreciate you listening in. We will soon be doing a episode one recap, as well as hopping into the Mugen Train arc going forward. And of course, hoping to get to Entertainment District very soon. If you like what you're hearing here, please go ahead and give us a follow on all of our socials or on @HashiraHalfHour on TikTok and Instagram and Twitter. You can see us on lives on Friday nights, probably around 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. We obviously release our podcasts every Sunday. And of course, we hope you have a great rest of your day. Umai.
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 Okay.